Well, shall we breathe into the moment for some deep breaths? And with a deep in breath. Shanti, shanti, shanti. The nature of God and why worship. Last week we spent most of our time on the nature of God. This week we'll spend a little bit more time on why. Why worship? From the Bhagavad Gita, the Song of the Lord. Here is our text, the Living Gita, by Sri Swami Satchitananda. We're going to start off today by going to a little different place. I have something that Albert Einstein said, which is a different viewpoint on the nature of God and on worship. Let's look at what he said. He said, a human being is part of the whole. This is like the famous poem by John Donne, no man is an island, entire unto himself, every man is a part of the continent. Same sentiment. A human being is part of the whole called by us universe. A part limited in time and space. And we are, aren't we? We're limited in time. We come at one point, leave at a point, and we're limited in space. We have a space we occupy. He or she experiences himself or herself, his thoughts and feelings, and we do. We experience ourselves, our thoughts and feelings, as something separate from the rest. And we do. We experience my thoughts are separate from your thoughts. My feelings are different than your feelings. And we experience ourselves as separate. We look separate. We are. We're physically separate, a kind of optical delusion of consciousness, says Mr. Einstein. He calls it an optical delusion. He goes on, this delusion is a kind of a prison for us, restricting us to our personal desires and to affection for a few persons nearest to us. Kind of a prison. Personal desires and affection for a few. Our task must be to free ourselves from this prison by widening our circle of compassion to embrace all living creatures and the whole of nature in its beauty. For most of us, this is a good idea. It's the message that Jesus taught, isn't it? There's no accomplishment in loving your friends, but can you love your enemies? Love those whom you disrespect and disagree with. Widening our circle of compassion. In the eyes of Jesus, the idea of enemy melts. If you love your enemy, that person, through your respect, generosity and compassion, suddenly the enemy-ness of that person melts, and enemies disappear. What's that? There's a class or a study or a book about life without enemies. What's that called? I know some people gave a course here some years back on having no enemies, a world without enemies.
Oh, yeah.
I forgot what it's called.
Greg Siebel, I think.
Yes, Greg. So that's our challenge, to free ourselves from the prison of having friends and enemies by widening our compassion, to embrace all living creatures and, of course, the whole of nature, and seeing it all as beautiful. Questions? We're going to go into some slokas now that have similar messages. All right, here we go. This is from chapter 7, number 14. No doubt it is hard to see through this. And the preceding slokas talked about this very prison that Einstein referenced, the prison of separation. No doubt it is hard to see through this, my divine illusion. The way the Bhagavad Gita puts it is, the Lord is saying, the reason you feel separate is because I created an illusion that you are. The divine created this illusion or delusion within you. And it's called Maya in Sanskrit. So we didn't make up this delusion or illusion ourselves. It was God-given. And the illusion is comprised of the gunas. Remember our gunas? Sattva, Raja, Tamas, just the characteristics of ourselves and all things. But those who take refuge in me absolutely pass over this illusion. So by giving ourselves to the divine, taking refuge, we can pass over or pass through. We may still have the illusion, but we may pass through it. Number 15, others still delight deluded by Maya lose their discrimination and sink to their lower nature. Not us, of course. But others, deluded by the illusion of separation, lose their discrimination. We have various, you could call them, capacities for intelligence within us. We have our intellectual mind. We also, in the Hindu way of looking things, not only have our intellectual mind, but we also have our sense of separation, our ego self. That's another aspect of ourselves. Our ego mind, our sense of separation, our ego self, and we have a third level, which is our sense of discrimination, our ability to discriminate and see the subtle differences between things that our ego minds may not be able to see. And that sense of discrimination often comes up when we're not trying to figure it out. When we're trying, we're often in our ego mind. Let's see, this is good, that's bad, this is better, this is worse. Shall I do this? Shouldn't I? Here's the good points. Here's the bad points. Here's how it'll benefit me. Here's how it'll cause some problems. Those are all ego mind things. But our sense of discrimination comes from a deeper inner place and flows naturally, so that when we see the difference, it just shows up as if it were always there, but somehow we hadn't noticed it. Until by grace, it shows up for us. That's discrimination. Deluded by Maya.
Discrimination, could that also be used, that word that we use in the fifth agreement, discernment?
Yes. Discernment or discrimination. Discernment has more the aspect of seeing deeper. Mm. Discrimination has more the idea of, I see the difference between things. I discriminate between this and that.
Oh, I see. Discrimination. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Right. Discriminate, so I can discriminate now between all of the thinking my mind did. Mm. It thought and 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 thought, and then it thought some more. And it still wasn't clear what I should do. Now, through my discriminate, I can discriminate between all the thinking thoughts I did and what, through patience, came up for me as what Reverend Russ called verity today in the sermon, Verity, the Truth. And it takes discernment to get to the place where we can discriminate, use our power of discrimination. Deluded by Maya, others, not us of course, sink to their lower nature, and thus they do evil things. Feel no devotion to me, and don't seek refuge in me. No, we're not doing any evil things, are we? Not lately. Maybe we did just one or two minor evil things years and years and years ago, or maybe not. Deluded by Maya. But those who have lost their discrimination sink to their lower nature and do evil things. Well, I'm guessing we could look out and imagine others who have no discrimination whatsoever and seem to be involved in a lot of evil things. Evil things. The challenge for us is not to be deluded by our own Maya, so that as we look outside, rather than looking through the eye of the mind, intellectual mind, and judgment, to decide who is evil and who is not evil, can we have the patience to let our discernment and discrimination let us see the truth as to who is really, unfortunately, deluded by and evil acts? It's a challenge, the difference between judgments, which come up in our minds, and this deep discrimination or discernment, the truth. Some do sink to their lower nature and do evil things, feel no devotion to me, and don't seek refuge in me. All right. Now let's go on to worship. Those who seek refuge in the Lord. Now we're going to learn about why worship. Why should we worship? Good people worship me, Arjuna, for four basic reasons. The first reason is to be relieved of suffering. So here in the scriptures, we're going to get four basic reasons for worshiping, and we can apply this to ourselves and to others. Now, none of these are good or bad. They're all just honey that we, like the bears, are attracted to. Different flavors, perhaps at different times in our lives. Four basic reasons to worship. One is to be relieved of suffering. I met someone today, for example, who shared with me that a loved one had died yesterday. A loved one died yesterday. And the person was under going experiencing some grieving. And I'm guessing a degree of suffering. So that suffering is an attraction to look to spirit for guidance. And this person shared with me that they were and had been and were comforted. One reason to worship, to be relieved of suffering, to understand life. Maybe that applies to us here. We come here and learn some spiritual techniques so that we can understand our life, our own life, better understand the life of those who are about us, and just the experience of life in general, all life. Read of suffering to understand life, to rise from poverty to wealth. We may find that worship is helpful for us to change our physical condition from physical poverty to at least sufficiency and wealth, or perhaps mental poverty, a poverty of a positive outlook on life, to wealth, which would be a positive outlook on life. There are stories of voyagers visiting poor people in remote places who don't have very much in the way of wealth, and yet are so happy, seemingly so happy, don't want to leave where they are. Enjoy their family, eat together, and work for the benefit of others, and are so happy. So wealth is a relative thing, isn't it? Wealth. Mm-hmm. Wealth here really isn't talking about Jeff Bezos, who's a $140 billion billionaire. No. Wealth is a complete experience of wealth. So to the extent that Jeff Bezos doesn't experience the wealth of life, to that limit, he hasn't really attained wealth. Now, he may be, I just read a story about him yesterday. It sounds like he's fully engaged in what he's doing with this company, Amazon, and really enjoying it. He has a purpose, he's going for it. And by the way, he accumulated $184 billion along the way. To rise from poverty to wealth. Those are three: suffering, life, poverty to wealth, and the fourth one is, and just because they are wise already. So we may be in that state sometimes, or we may not be. But the fourth reason to worship is because we're just, we're living in the truth. We're living in the verity. We're not victims. We're not victors. We're not even, as Russ said today, vessels. Rather, we're living in the verity. So it's just natural for us to worship. Those are the four reasons to worship. And Satchitananda is going to talk about that. Any questions?
I like the correlation between today's service of, you know, victor, vessel,
verity. I find it interesting, and I suggest it's worth our compassion to notice that some of the figures in our political spectrum today consider themselves victims. Consider themselves victims. And through victimhood, feel entitled and righteous about attacking others in whatever way possible, because a victim has that right to protect themselves. So the idea of victimhood we can observe today in our country as part of our current political spectrum, being a victim. Commentary. Mr. Satchitananda has to say, here Lord Krishna speaks of four types of people who become devotees of God. And remember, it's all honey, just different flavors. All four worship God, but for different reasons. So the first is suffering. When everything else fails, then the seeker calls, O God. Satchitananda tells the story of a place in Tibet where there is a rope bridge going over a gorge. And when the pilgrims are walking across the rope bridge, they are praying, O Rama, 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 which is the word for God, Rama. And after they cross the bridge and everything is fine, then they say, I've forgotten the word, nama, 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 which is pleasure, whatever I desire. So when we're in trouble, we call on God. Nothing wrong with that. That's one form of devotion. It's good. The Lord doesn't criticize that. At least when everything fails, you turn to God. So it's okay, it's another form of worship. Worship is open to us no matter what the state is. The second is the person who seeks knowledge of worldly things. I classify us in that category. We seek knowledge of worldly things, and among the worldly things, we're a worldly thing, aren't we? If you think of the universe, as Einstein pointed out, we aren't separate from the universe. We're just another aspect of the universe. It's hard to see that because of Maya, our illusion of separation. If I asked you to meditate on the universe, our natural inclination would be, here I am, me, separate, and there's the universe, and I'm meditating on the universe. Can we learn, as a spiritual practice, to meditate or hold the universe to include us, include ourselves? Just breathe into that. Let's try it now. We like experiments, don't we? Fun to do experiments, so let's just do a little 10-second meditation. I'll guide you in it. We're going to get our feet firmly on the floor. Let our eyes drift close. And the meditation is to see the universe and see ourselves as part of it. See ourselves as an essential part of the universe. Can you envision that now? Can we acknowledge this truth that we are part of the universe by saying to ourselves, thank you, God, I am part of the universe. Thank you, God. I am an essential part of the universe. Thank you. Om. yourself to come back to, from the universe. As you open your eyes, can you experience the universe eyes open and you being a part of it? Just breathe in to you being in the universe here in your chair and a part of it. Thank you, God. I'm part of the whole. And breathe into that with our eyes open. Any comment or question on that meditation? So there we have it. We seek knowledge of worldly things, for example, our place in the universe. I want to know this and that. God, please show me. Tell me the secret. So we're here to see if we can delve into some things that maybe aren't clear for us, or even find some things we thought were clear and find new clarity. Worldly things. So that's the second. The third is the one who is neither interested in knowledge nor in distress, but worships for worldly wealth. And it's interesting, this came as number three. You would think that the order of these has something to do with sort of how high you are in your spiritual progress. So you would think, perhaps I did, knowledge of worldly things would come after worldly wealth, but it doesn't. So remember, all of these are co-equal. None is better than the other. Don't we rank things? One, two, three, four. One's the best, four's the worst. Two is getting better, three's almost there, four. But not in this case. Not in this case. They're all honey, depending on what we, the honey bear, are hungry for that day or that time in our life. Worships for worldly wealth. We see those types in the world. We see people who hunger after wealth. We see people, for example, who are alcoholics, who go to the 12-step program, who feel a poverty of themselves in the world. They may have some money, but feel a poverty of themselves in the world and want to get back to a wealth of feeling their own person, and not under the control of the desire for alcohol or smoking or drugs or whatever. So isn't it a wealth to feel like all is in place, all is as it should be? And I'm guessing that people, we just had a member of our family, well, sort of a member of our family who died not too long ago. And he was a smoker, and he smoked a pack a day. And if you asked him, he would say he hated it. He hated himself for being a smoker, but he couldn't stop, he said, and he just kept on smoking. And he was an angry man. He was angry about it. So you see, he did not have a wealth of well-being, did he? He didn't. My father was the kindest of men, very kind man. He knew he had an addictive personality. Once someone gave him a marijuana cigarette, and he knew he had an addictive personality. Have any of you ever, well, you don't have to, but I've smoked marijuana one time in my life, and it was okay, and I did it. And didn't feel like doing it again. It was okay. It's sort of like having a couple of three drinks, and just wasn't attracted to it. My father would never smoke that marijuana cigarette because he knew he had an addictive personality. He put it in his wallet, carried it there for years as a reminder of his addictive personality until it finally disintegrated. When he was 14 years old, he and his friends went out on the farmland and got corn silk. and made cigarettes out of corn silk when he was 14. And then he became a lifelong smoker.
Does corn silk have something addictive in it? Or is it just...
I have no idea. I think as a kid, you're not given access to tobacco.
I mean, there's no nicotine in it. I mean, isn't that what addicts you to the tobacco? Maybe there's just...
I think so.
I know they like to just... It's an oral thing, too. So maybe started it. And then once he got the tobacco, wow,
I don't know about corn silk, but there must be something, like you say, about the habit of doing it.
Right, there is that.
And then there's the social circumstance of when you do it, when you don't.
But it also, my sister would always reach for a cigarette whenever she was upset.
Yes.
You know, it calmed you.
Yes.
So,
or some people, whenever the phone rings, they reach for a cigarette, answer the phone.
Time to stop and relax.
I lived in the Middle East for a while, in Beirut, Lebanon, and I was around people there who smoked, but in an unusual way. They weren't really habitual smokers like my father was. Rather, it was the habit after dinner to get together and talk, and maybe have a sweet, a small chocolate, not a lot of them, just one, and smoke a cigarette with a cup of Turkish coffee. That was the habit. But my father's habit got him. He didn't like it that he smoked. He tried to stop. He had difficulty stopping. One time he announced he'd stopped, and we were glad for him. He'd gotten emphysema by then. We were glad he stopped, and he was... a man who was active in the little theater. He loved the theater. He was a director. My mother was an actress. One day, my sister and I went to visit him at the little theater. He was doing a play. We drove into the parking lot, and there was my father, smoking a cigarette. We caught him. And as soon as he saw us, he put that cigarette behind him. He was ashamed. And we went up to him and criticized him. Why are you smoking? He says, I don't buy them anymore. I just borrowed it from someone. And then he said things like this. He said, maybe I'll live one day less longer from the cigarette, but I'm enjoying it now. That's what he said. So there's all these things around smoking. Now, later in his life, when he got emphysema really bad, and he couldn't even smoke anymore, he confided to me, he said, you know, Steve, that was a stupid thing I said about having this pleasure taking a day off my life. He recognized it.
Not being able to breathe is a hard way to go.
Hard way to go.
Frightening.
So worldly wealth includes not only things, but also our sense of being prosperous, having everything, being okay. And we see these types in the world. The fourth devotee is already wise. He or she worships just for the joy of worshiping. This devotee doesn't need to, but feels there's nothing else to do, let me just worship. I wonder if Satchitananda was a person like that. There's nothing else to do, let me just worship, let me occupy myself this way. So those are the four sorts of worship, none better. First one, remember what it was? Suffering. Second, worldly knowledge. Third, wealth of well-being. And fourth, it's just what I'm inclined to do. I don't need a reason for it. I'm drawn to it. And can you see how worshiping in the other ways, suffering, worldly knowledge, wealth, can lead to that fourth state of just, it's just what I do. It almost becomes a habit like smoking. Mm-hmm. It's just what I do.
Without the emphysema.
Without the emphysema.
Yeah.
Worshipping doesn't give us emphysema. Those are the remarks I had for today. Any questions or comments before we close? Victim. Victor.
Vessel.
Verity. Mm. Now that sequence goes up, doesn't it? Mm. Now I like this sequence. Victim. Victor. Vessel. Verity. And verity is this fourth sort of worship, isn't it? Where one just lives more and more in the truth. And is just drawn to worship. Worship in the sense of that meditation we did. I am just part of the universe, which we could also call God. I am part of God, and God is part of me. And when I visualize the universe and me part of it, I can also visualize God as empty space and me as an empty space within the empty space. Yes, I know there's things in the universe and we are things. Like Einstein said, we live in time and space, but there's a certain part of us that is just that empty divinity that exists in the larger divinity or space, universe. Are we ready to close? Let's take three conscious breaths. And with a deep in-breath, Om. Shanti. Shanti, shanti. And go in peace, my friends. We're just in time, I hear that. Yeah. Noisy hubbub out there.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining me.
Thank you.